Welcome to our show on Facebook on Augusta Free Press. I am Chris Graham, joined by Crystal Graham. We're going to talk some sports here on a Tuesday afternoon. Crystal?
Yeah, sorry, I'm here. Just didn't get the cue there. But there's been a lot going on in the world of sports, and it's not just UVA. You know, a lot of times we talk about UVA sports here, and we're going to get to that. We're going to talk some UVA basketball, but we're going to start with a couple of other news bits that Chris has been writing about this week. We're going to start with Liberty football. Who knew that Hugh Freeze, who had, you know, the hope was when they brought him on a couple seasons ago that he would bring the program to respectability, but no one could have foreseen this 10-1 season. Chris, what do you have to say about what's going on there with Liberty?
What's interesting, Liberty has been moving up in system from the FCS perspective to the FBS perspective the past couple of years. In fact, the final year of the previous coach, Turner Gill, was the first year of their what was a two-year transition period from FCS to FBS football. That goes from, you know, from the level of schools like, you know, the JMUs of the world, the CAA football, and 63 scholarships to 85 scholarships and playing on the big boy level. And, you know, among the problems Liberty had, they didn't have a conference. They're still independent. Now they're after 3 years of being an FBS school. And not being in the conference, you got to go find games. You know, there's so much to being a FBS school when you're an independent that's so tough. But they made the splash hire. They went for Hugh Freeze. He had, you know, track record at Ole Miss, a 39-25 record there, but also baggage. The scandal, academic scandal. There was a scandal involving the use of his university-issued cell phone regarding escorts. And so he lost his job there. And he had been looking to get back into coaching. He had been, I think he had interviewed for a couple of offensive coordinator positions in the SEC, and then all of a sudden Liberty comes and hires him. And, you know, I was among the many surprised. What do you mean? Hugh Freeze is going to be here for more than a year or two. This is an interesting hire. And last year they go 8-5, they won a bowl game, the Cure Bowl, which is the same bowl they played in this year. But last year, you know, it wasn't quite the same. I think they beat Georgia State last year. This year they beat a Coastal Carolina team that was ranked in the top 15. And, but, you know, this year, you know, they started out kind of slow. I mean, they won the games, but, you know, they had a couple of tight wins over an average Western Kentucky team, an awful Florida International team. Those two teams combined went 5-12 this year. They went up to Syracuse. You know, Syracuse only went 1-9 this year, but they're in the ACC. They beat Syracuse in the Carrier Dome. That got people's attention, but still, okay, they beat Syracuse. It was when they won at Tech back on November 7th at Virginia Tech. That, you know, and the way they did it, last second field goal to win that game in Lane Stadium, that said, oh, got people saying, okay, all right, maybe something's going on here now at this stage. And in fact, it was that week that Liberty announced that they had given Freeze a contract extension through 2026, but still everybody is, you know, all the SEC fan bases where they are talking about needing new coaches wanted Hugh Freeze. And, you know, the way that Cure Bowl ended with Coastal Carolina, two upstart teams, you know, one of the better bowls you'll see outside of the playoff games this year. Liberty 9-1 going into the game, Coastal Carolina 11-0 going into that game, and it played to overtime. Liberty wins in overtime, gets a field goal on its first possession, and blocks a field goal final play of the game. I mean, this is a program-defining type thing. And so, Crystal, my question then when I wrote this column was, you know, is this something that, you know, Freeze maybe just uses to get another job? Or is it something that, you know, he's got something to build on here? And that's kind of what I wanted to examine in this column. And you know, I don't know. I think that there's something to build there at Liberty for Hugh Freeze in that program.
And that's the big question. You know, a friend of mine wrote on Facebook, you know, is Liberty really, you know, they're the best Virginia-based college football team right now, you know, better than UVA, better than Virginia Tech, you know. So there was definitely some comments related to that. But that's the big question mark, Chris. Does Hugh Freeze stick with the program or does he go somewhere else? What are your thoughts on that? And what are your thoughts on, you know, on going forward, you know, on him, whether it's him or the Liberty program as a whole, as it builds towards the future?
Well, let's be careful. Slow the roll there a little bit. I mean, yeah, Liberty is going to finish in the top 25 when the final polls come out in a couple weeks. They won't come out until after the national championship game. So bide your time, but they will be a top 25. They'll probably be top 20. They might be top 15 when it's all over with this year. With a 10-1 record and the wins they had. But, you know, they're not the best program in Virginia. And I'm not saying anything controversial there. You know, when you just looking at recruiting, they still aren't going to get players that Virginia or Virginia Tech want, that ACC schools in the region want. I mean, he's going to have to do better, more with less for a while. Okay. So let's just be realistic there. If Liberty had played the schedule that either Virginia or Virginia Tech played this year, they would not have been 10-1. They might have been better than Virginia or Virginia Tech this year. But those two schools had to play 10 game ACC schedules. Liberty played three ACC schools, won two of the games, lost the other one close, as I mentioned in this column. But, you know, the week in, week out wear and tear of playing a Power Five schedule, Liberty's not there yet. But they don't have to be. That's the beauty. And this is why I wonder about Liberty's situation here. They're still independent. They can't be independent forever. You know, this is like, to me, this year is so important for Liberty football. Having this 10-1 season this year, getting the national attention that they got this year, that win over Coastal Carolina, who themselves had done themselves so well, you know, 11-0, they beat BYU on their way to that 11-0. And that was a very thrilling game itself back a few weeks ago. So for Liberty now, they've got the 10-1 season. You've got to parlay that, in my opinion, into an invitation into a conference, and not just any conference. I mean, you know, no offense, like, you know, the invitations could be forthcoming from conferences like the Sun Belt, et cetera, some lower level conferences. You know, if I'm Liberty, if I'm Ian McCall, the athletics director there, I'm in contact with the folks who run the American Athletic Conference, the AAC. Well, Central Florida is in that conference. Memphis is in that conference. It is the best group of five conference. Mountain West people might argue with me on that, but AAC is the best group of five conference. There are 12 Division I conferences or 12 FBS conferences. There's the Power Five. That's the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, and then there's the group of five, and that's the next group down. The AAC is the best of that. Now here's a fun fact. The AAC has 11 members. Boy, having a 12th member would be perfect in terms of fleshing out that conference. And Liberty being, you know, coming off this season, you know, they're going to be a top 20, maybe fringe top 15 this year in the final polls. And when you start thinking then in terms of the other sports at Liberty, men's basketball, Richie McKay, love Richie McKay. He was Tony's right-hand man for 10 years or so. Tony Bennett at UVA, that is. He's got Liberty basketball. I mean, they won 30 games last year without even having an NCAA tournament. Liberty basketball is the real deal. And so, you know, I could see Liberty making that jump into the AAC. If you get into the AAC, now here's the next thing. I think this for UVA football too, but we're already starting to hear the rumblings this year. Hey, we should have had an 18 playoff this year, kind of like the NFL adjusted its playoffs this year because of the pandemic. We should have had an 18 playoff this year. We're going to have an 18 playoff pretty soon. We might even have a 16 team playoff pretty soon. That's going to make it so that group of five champions have a better chance of getting into a playoff. So if Liberty can parlay this 10-1 season into an AAC invite, and then Hugh Freeze can go out and he doesn't have to compete with UVA, Virginia Tech, and North Carolina and Carolina State. And, you know, cause a lot of us are competing for the same athletes in the Mid-Atlantic here. He doesn't have to compete though with UVA and Virginia Tech, and ACC schools week in, week out. He can play a couple of those teams in non-conference, and then he can play the AAC teams, win the AAC championship, get in the playoff. That's all anybody wants, is to be able to get in the playoff. There's a possibility here. So I'm kind of laying out a few steps that have to happen, and you know, who knows if they're happening, but I can see it. I can see it maybe starting to happen, and this season for Liberty being that jumping off point for this program.
All right, we're also going to talk coming up here in just a minute, Washington football team and UVA basketball, so stay with us. But first, Chris, I noticed you're wearing a Fishburne military wrestling shirt. You know, our nephew Brady has been at Fishburne Military School this year, hoping to wrestle. It kind of makes me think about the fact that I think you've got a schedule today from VMI related to wrestling as well. And it looks like your ESPN broadcasting season is about to pick up, the spring season.
The spring season starts next weekend, January 9th, VMI hosting a wrestling meet. And we have already, it's three different dates, but five different dual matches that VMI, I mean, they're moving full steam ahead, and I'm glad to see it. And so, yeah, next weekend, January 9th, I'll be on ESPN, either three or plus, I'm not sure which it is yet, broadcasting some VMI wrestling. And yeah, Brady, our nephew Brady Fincham, a two-time state runner-up, his senior season, hopefully he gets a chance to you know, compete as a senior this year. I know he's getting some college looks as well. I'm wearing this shirt in honor of him, but also kind of a reminder that, yeah, VMI wrestling coming up. And then I've been warned by Wade Brainer, the voice of the Keydets, that he's got a lot more coming my way in terms of the spring season. You know, the football season starts for them, the FCS level, largely. Some FCS schools played some games this fall, but largely the FCS schedule starts, I believe it's February 20th is the first week. VMI is on the road. I have done home radio play-by-play for the last 4 or 5 years. Our home schedule starts the 27th. We have an 8-game schedule, 4 home, 4 on the road. So between that and then wrestling and then women's and men's soccer and baseball, it could be quite busy time. I might want to have to find a room on the post with all the traveling back and forth I'll be doing to Lexington in the next few months.
All right. Well, that sounds good. So as promised, I thought, Chris, maybe briefly you could try to break down this Washington football team for those of us who are fans or who even just follow the NFL. It's been a pretty crazy couple of weeks there as far as quarterbacks are concerned. You wrote a story about that this week. Did you want to talk a little bit about that situation?
Yeah, what's interesting is that a guy that has Virginia ties is in the mix. It's a big part of the story, actually. A lot of folks, I'm sure, heard that the Redskins. First time I've already referenced it. The Washington football team has cut ties with its 2019 first round pick, Dwayne Haskins, and that's I would say a surprise move, if only because, you know, the way contracts work, he's an $8.5 million cap hit next year already. And that's how much they wanted to cut ties. They're taking an $8.5 million hit on their cap next year just to get rid of him now. Haskins, of course, I mean, his, you know, the going into the season, you know, it was his first season, maybe as the full season as a starter. I don't think there were expectations going into the season that Washington would be competitive in terms of possibilities for playoffs. And then the NFC East has been so historically bad that Washington at 6-9 right now is, if they win coming up this weekend, and I think the game's Sunday night with Philadelphia, win and they're in, and they could still get in if they lose, which is amazing to think, but they could be 6-10 and be in the playoffs. So that ratcheted expectations up. Ron Rivera, the first year coach, you know, he was at Carolina, went to a Super Bowl, had a great run at Carolina. He comes in and he's trying to instill a new culture. And his rebuilding process had to take a different turn when this team was all of a sudden in a mix for a potential playoff berth. And so when they were 2-7 and Haskins had only won one game as a starting quarterback, he had to make a choice. Hey, they've got a great defense. Washington does. One of the better defenses in the NFL, but the offense was losing games. They were 2-7. And so they made the move at that time. Alex Smith ends up being the starting quarterback. Great story, Alex Smith, the guy who almost died a couple of years ago because of he broke his leg in a game. Complications from the compound fracture, the surgery almost killed him. He came back. He's been a very effective quarterback. He won 4 straight starts, got them in first place, but he got injured. Now, the injury is not one of those things related to the previous injury that almost killed him. But it's kept him on the shelf the past couple of weeks. And so Ron Rivera had to go to Haskins as a starting quarterback, and they lost the last two and really, in games, both games could have been wins. Let's put it that way. If there was better quarterback play or even just average quarterback play, at the end of last week's game, Ron Rivera made a switch. Taylor Heineke is the guy with Virginia ties. He played at ODU. He led them through. We just talked about Liberty's transition from FCS to FBS. Taylor Heinicke led ODU. He was the quarterback as they were making the transition from FCS to FBS. Put up some huge numbers at ODU. But he's a guy that didn't even get a star rating coming out of high school. He was a Georgia high school quarterback legend, at least in his part of Georgia, put up huge numbers in high school. But he's 6'1", 180 pounds coming out of high school. Those guys don't get looks by major programs. He got one offer. It was from ODU. Mm-hmm. He goes there, does great, doesn't get drafted. So he kind of goes through the same process again. He didn't get a star rating even from the recruiting services. Got one offer from ODU. Then he goes undrafted. He's won a couple of practice squads in the NFL. He started a game for Carolina back in 2018 when they were in an emergency situation. But that's it. He had one start. He mopped up in a couple of games. He signed with the XFL last year. Didn't even play in the XFL. I mean, this guy's like bounced around. He's the epitome of journeyman, but he's persevered. And so when the Washington football team had its quarterback injury issues, the team went out, signed him to the practice squad back on December 8th, so just a couple weeks ago. All that said, Rivera says, we're down 20-6 to Carolina, fourth quarter. Haskins isn't moving the team. Let's put Heinicke in and see what happens. What happens? One touchdown, another called back, eventually turnover on downs, but on two drives, 12 of 19, 137 yards, one touchdown pass. And Ron Rivera then says on Monday, hey, if Alex Smith can't go, Taylor Heinicke's our quarterback this coming Sunday for the playoff bid. With the playoff bid on the line, we're going to go with a guy we signed 2 weeks ago off the streets to be on our practice squad. And then they cut ties with the number one draft pick, their top draft pick from last year. So Heinicke is built for this role. He looked very comfortable on Sunday in that loss. He was hitting guys, hitting the right guys. He was not indecisive. Had great pocket presence, and he impressed Ron Rivera. So, yeah, Washington football team fans, you probably haven't yet bought the new memorabilia because you're waiting for whatever the next name's going to be. You don't know what the songs are, but, you know, cue it up anyway. Sunday night, your team wins the game. They're in the playoffs, and they would likely get – here's the funny thing. Whoever represents the NFC East in the playoffs gets a home game. Even though they'll have a losing record, they'll get a home game. Let's just say you're the Washington football team, you're in the playoffs. You get Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Rams likely in the first round. With Jared Goff, their starting quarterback, injured. You get a backup quarterback. Could be Bryce Perkins, of all people. He's the backup now in L.A. And so you could get a chance to not only get into playoffs, maybe win a game in the playoffs. What a weird season this has been. What a weird year this has been, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, well, good job breaking that down. I did post a link to that story that Chris wrote on the Facebook page. Feel free to check that out or go to AugustaFreePress.com if you're watching this later and you want to read that story as well. Chris, will shift gears a little bit to UVA basketball coming off a tough loss to Gonzaga, the Zags. Hopefully UVA learned a lot from that game. They are facing off against Notre Dame on Wednesday night at 6:00 on the ACC Network. You wrote your column, as you do before every UVA basketball game, what UVA basketball fans need to know. So, Chris, what is it? What do people need to know about Notre Dame?
Notre Dame is 3-4. Don't let that record deceive you. Their losses are to Michigan State, Ohio State, Duke, and Purdue. Three of those teams are ranked. I don't know how Purdue is not ranked. They're 7-3 this season, but and they've beaten Kentucky. This Notre Dame team has. It's interesting when you look at their rotation, their numbers. Mike Bray, the coach at Notre Dame, has been there for a long time. He's gone with a short rotation this year. 7-man rotation. 7 guys averaging double digits per night. 4 of his guys averaging over 33 minutes a night. So he goes with a really short group in terms of rotation. It's a big group, actually, in terms of the height. But Prentice Hubb is a point guard. He's a bit turnover prone. He can score. He doesn't get in the lane much, makes a lot of his points off threes. It's interesting. His numbers really don't add up to the guy that his counting numbers would. 16.4 points a game as a point guard. You think, man, this guy probably gets in the lane, gets to the foul line a lot. No, he's mostly a three-point shooter. Gets most of his shots mostly on spot ups, actually, when I do the deep dive. They have two big guys. They had been starting 6'11 center Juwan Durham, but he's been coming off the bench the past couple of games. I would expect with, you know, with UVA, the way they way Tony Bennett uses his lineup, Durham probably comes off the bench in this one as well. The guy that really bothers me the most when I look at his numbers and what his game is, Nate Lazowski. He's only the third leading scorer on the team, 14.6 a game, but man, he is efficient as heck. He's their best spot-up shooter, 61.1%. He's their best post-up guy. He's their best guy on cuts. Honestly, and he's 6'10". He's the guy that I'd be using him more from an efficiency standpoint. He will get Jay Huff and probably a little bit of Caden Shedrick as well defensively. But he's a classic Notre Dame big guy. The last few years, Bray's always had a guy. I'm thinking of the Mooney guy from the last couple of years, a big guy who can shoot the three and who can roll well. The complimentary pieces, Dane Goodwin probably wouldn't like to be called a complimentary piece. He's a second leading scorer on his team, 16.1 a game, 51% field goal shooter. He's the team's best spot up shooter. He'll play the four position for them a lot. He's a 6'6 guy, but he'll actually play four and he'll match up well with Sam Hauser. They have depth at that size at between 6'4 and 6'5, 6'6. Trey Wirtz will get some time. He's a 12.7 points per game scorer. Ryan Cormack's 10.3 a game. Their most athletic, best defensive player at that position is Nikola Jogo, only 4.2 points a game. Very efficient, 58.3% from the field, but he's their best defensive player. Didn't shoot a lot, but he's a glue kind of guy. And so they're a team. They don't play a lot of guys. They don't play a fast pace. It's a very different game than the Gonzaga game, certainly from Virginia will be. Emphasis is on efficiency. You know, less possessions. They're a veteran team. This is one advantage they've got, I think. I think Virginia's problems this year are very similar to other top-level team programs having problems. Kentucky's 1-6. Duke is just, I think, 3-2 right now. North Carolina's lost some games this year. Michigan State of late has kind of hit a rough patch. I think that the commonality to all those programs having problems is they've got a lot of talent, but they have new pieces. And so that's what I was analyzing in my grades column when I wrote my report card for UVA's non-conference season. You know, Sam Hauser's been in the program for a year, but he was a redshirt last year. Tony, like a lot of coaches, Tony Bennett will use his redshirts to lead the scout team, and they don't necessarily get a lot of practice and reps in Virginia's systems. They're out there to simulate what the other teams do to help get the current guys ready for those games. Caden Shedrick's another guy. He's a redshirt freshman. You know, he's getting minutes this year. He's new. You know, he's talented but new. Trey Murphy III, just the two leading scorers are the two new guys for Virginia, Hauser and Trey Murphy III. Trey Murphy III transferred in from Rice, still learning his way around the system. So, and even the guys who are back, Jay Huff and Kie Clark, you know, the familiar guys we know, they've been around, but they're playing with new guys. And so practice has been different. It's the same for everybody, but practice has been different for everybody. You know, you haven't quite had the amount of work in group settings that you usually have by this time of year. And so it's a work in progress. And so, you know, Notre Dame, though, you look at Notre Dame's roster, it's all juniors and seniors. These guys play together for 2 or 3 years. And so I would give, at this stage in the season, I would give teams like Notre Dame the advantage over teams like the Virginias, Kentuckys, Carolinas, Dukes, with a mix of returning talent and new talent to work together. You know, I'm of the mindset, and Jerry Ratcliffe, our good friend from across the mountain, jerryratcliffe.com, he agrees with me. He wrote a column that we helped publish just the other day, saying a lot of the same things I'm saying, that you really can't judge these, really anybody, but especially the teams like Virginia, probably until mid-February or so, yeah, until they get the reps. I know Virginia fans don't want to hear that, though. They want to go out and win every game, and they want another flag hanging out there. I'm just going to counsel patience, because it's going to take a while before we can see what the final product is going to look like with Virginia.
It does seem like most of the people who make prognostications, so to speak, on games have UVA up by about 4 points or so in this game versus Notre Dame Wednesday night. You've got links to ESPN, kenpom.com, And one other source there, they have about a 66 to 72% win probability. Yeah, Bart Torvik, is that it?
That's it.
Right. Yeah, I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to say that wrong. So.
Yeah, I know. I could tell.
That's why I skipped that one. I was like, oh, yeah, one other source. But you know, so they all have UVA with a decent win probability for Wednesday night. But I think, as you said, Chris, you know, UVA is 4-2 going into ACC play. Really, truly, though, primetime is March Madness, you know, and so getting UVA prepared in some of these early games, you know, for what they're going to need mid-March is what's most important. And as you said, there's a lot of new players that are still working their way into the mix. And some of these more seasoned teams do have the advantage, especially with practices what they are. And oftentimes players kind of on the court by themselves and a lot of things being done by Zoom to take proper precautions during this COVID-19 era, so to speak. So, Chris, you mentioned your report card. I'm not sure if you wanted to break down any further kind of how you've been grading UVA hoops so far this season.
Yeah, you know, they're 4-2 and they haven't really played anybody except for the one team they played blew off the door. So the grades aren't great. I gave the offense a B-, the defense a C-. I'm probably being generous. The offensive, you know, what I guess to kind of buttress what I said there, you know, a lot of the problems were exposed. We can really only talk about the Gonzaga game because the Zags are an established team, a lot of guys back, et cetera. And man, you know, they shot the ball well from three, even though that was mostly one guy. He was, you know, the guy who was 9 for 13 from three. And then Corey Kispert. And then, you know, they got a lot of backdoor layups. They were 21 of 29 on layups. They didn't even have a dunk, not a single dunk in the game. 21 of 29 on layups. I ran some numbers. The 73 games coming in to last Saturday's game for Virginia with Gonzaga, which would encompass the entirety of the 2018-2019 national championship season and all of last season, plus then the first four games of this season. Virginia gave up an average of 16 attempts at the rim, either layups or dunks per game. They gave up 29 to Gonzaga. They gave up an average of 9 makes per game. They gave 21 to Gonzaga. So that tells you that there were breakdowns on the back end of the pack line. The pack line defense works. You know, they a lot of teams use pick and roll as a primary initiator of offense. Virginia's defense works by taking that away. You know, you double team the ball handler. You make him pass the ball in a way he doesn't want to pass it. And then you have help defense behind as the screener runs to the basket, and your help defense behind slows the screener down enough that he doesn't get any easy look. And then you make them shoot a shot at the end of the shot clock. We've seen that happen a million times watching UVA basketball games. What we saw happen Saturday a lot was we would screen the ball away. We would double team the ball away from the pick and roll. They'd make one pass, hit the screener at the rim, and he'd shoot a layup. That's just what happened 29 times. They made 21 of them. That will not happen eventually, you know, hopefully eventually sooner rather than later. But as the guys who are new to the system, Sam Hauser, Trey Murphy, figure out what they're supposed to be doing. And it's hard. I mean, to play behind that play happening in front of you, you've got to be able to guard the three-point shooter and also guard the guy running down to the basket. So you've got to be able to guard two guys. And it's not intuitive. It's not something that you did in high school, and it's not something for those two guys that they did in college, respectively, at Marquette and Rice. So they got to learn. They got to learn something new. They'll learn it. Everybody else that played for Virginia learned it. There's a bunch of them. You see jerseys hanging behind me that learned it. They're in the NBA right now. They learned it. There's more jerseys that are coming. Those guys all learned it too. But it takes time. Those are your two leading scorers though. And you can't keep Sam Hauser and Trey Murphy the third off the floor. In fact, you need him on the floor more, especially Murphy. He's only been getting like 22 minutes a game. We need him on the floor more. Grading the veterans, we need Jay Huff on the floor more. He's only getting 20.7 minutes a game. Some of his issue is what it's been really his whole career. Foul trouble. He gets early foul trouble. He had 2 fouls in the first half, had to sit much the first half, picked up his third early in the second half, picked up his fourth midway through the second half against Gonzaga. You know, you got to have – he's the best player on the team. His offensive rating is 148.8. His defensive rating is 88.8. You know, you look at him from just an analytical standpoint, he leads the ACC in player efficiency rating. He's sixth nationally in player efficiency rating. We're talking about the whole country. There's 357 teams, 15 guys on each team. That's 5,000 guys. He's number six in the country in player efficiency rating. But we're only getting 20 minutes a game out of him. We need to get more, 30 minutes a game. If you have Jay Huff on the floor 30 minutes a game, that's a much better team. K.A. Clark has been struggling. He had 19 in the game with Gonzaga. Turnovers have been an issue for him. Defense has been an issue for him. You know, we need K.A. to get his swagger back. He seems a little lacking in confidence right now. Reese Beekman, the incoming freshman point guard who ballyhooed, great recruit, top 50 recruit, doesn't seem to have any issues. He seems to be a very confident young man. And so, you know, Beekman might end up supplanting K.A. Clark if the current trends were to continue. And I hope they don't. We need K.A., we need Beekman both. We need both those guys at the top of their game. You know, ready to step up. I headlined this in the – subheaded this in the column, the rotation guys. Casey Morcell, I'm starting to think, is just who he is, unfortunately. He's not a very good jump shooter. He's an average defender. You know, he was the linchpin of last year's recruiting class. He's not lived up to it quite yet, and I'm not sure if he will. Thomas Woldetensai has really stepped up as a defensive player. We need him to shoot the ball more. He's only shooting the ball four times a game. We need him to shoot the ball more. And you know, it's hard to say, hey, dude, shoot the ball more. You know, he's not selfish, but he kind of needs to be. It's been nice to see a couple of young guys step up. Justin McCoy, I mentioned Caden Shedrick a little earlier talking about the Notre Dame game. Two young guys with energy, their motors, athletic, big guys. McCoy 6'8", Shedrick is 6'11", and need to see more of them. They're both guys. I mean, their offense defense splits in terms of efficiency. They should be on the floor a little more than they are. So it's all there. You know, the talent's there. Just need some more reps. And I think this team will be just fine. You know, to me, the preseason accolades, I don't know that they went to their heads. You know, I think there are some people speculating out there. Maybe they thought number four preseason nationally, preseason ACC favorite. You know, maybe they're not playing as hard as they could. I don't think that's the issue. I think it's just simply a matter of Tony Bennett's system isn't, I call it roll the ball out there and play. Yeah, there's a lot of coaches who just, they recruit great, and then they just roll the ball out there and tell the kids to play. Tony Bennett's system is not that. You know, his offense is very sophisticated. It takes a lot of practice, a lot of reps to learn your positioning and learn the right execution. Defensively, it's even harder. You know, it's so be patient. These kids will learn it. And when they learn it and when that light goes off, this team has a ceiling that I think is a national championship ceiling. We just have to be patient and let them kind of develop.
All right. So UVA Notre Dame, Wednesday night, 6 p.m., ACC Network. If you want to read more about what Chris Graham had to say in that report card, I posted the link both on Facebook, and you can also go to Augusta Free Press. Look at the sports section. Obviously, that'll be listed prominently there as well. Chris, you mentioned the guys behind you, and I'd be remiss if I didn't at least bring that up, because we have been watching a lot of preseason, and now actual season for NBA is underway. We've been watching Malcolm Brogdon, Joe Harris, Kyle Guy. We've been trying to catch Ty Jerome. Mamadi Diakite is even on a main roster, from what I understand. So a lot of UVA alums that are in the NBA. Any highlights that you want to mention among these players so far this season?
Oh, DeAndre Hunter, too. Last night, a win for the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks could be an up-and-coming team this year. You know, Trae Young, a point guard, and then DeAndre's really stepping into his own. He had double figures last night. Now, Brogdon and his team, Indiana, you know, we got some guys. I mean, these two guys I'm pointing to right here. I love bragging on these guys, Malcolm Brogdon and Joe Harris. Joe Harris showed up. He followed Tony Bennett cross-country. He was a recruit of Tony's at Washington State. He played at a low-A high school in Washington State, and then when Tony got the job at UVA, he came across and played at UVA. And, you know, Joe was supposedly not athletic enough to play in the NBA. Remember that he was a second-round draft pick with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The good teams with LeBron James competing for championships. And they traded him in his second season. He was injured. He got released by Orlando as soon as they completed the trade. It was a salary cap dump, basically. He was out of the league. And he caught on with the Brooklyn Nets when they were bad. Got himself some playing time, earned some more playing time, won the three-point shooting championship, beat Steph Curry in Charlotte for the three-point shooting championship on All-Star Game weekend a couple years ago, played on Team USA in the World Championships. now he's an $18 million a year guy. And he's on a team that is one of the favorites to win the championship now, because the Nets signed Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and they made it a priority to keep Joe. That's a great compliment. They've already got two of the best players in the NBA, and they made it a priority to say, we need Joe at $18 million a year to hit threes when those guys draw defenders and they sag off of Joe, and Joe can hit the three. So great for Joe. And then Brogdon, another guy. I mean, he was a guy that I remember talking with him after a UVA game. I think it was the UVA-Harvard game. It would have been in like December of 2015 probably. He talked about how his grandmother was upset with him because his final two college choices were UVA and Harvard, and he chose UVA, and his grandmother said, you should have gone to Harvard. What are you talking about? And, you know, he goes from being a guy that, you know, could have and should have, his family thought he should have gone to Harvard to play basketball. He goes to UVA. He gets his undergraduate degree and his master's degree while competing at UVA. Second round draft pick, not athletic enough to play in the NBA, you know, and then he's the first second round draft pick to be the NBA rookie of the year. There were 30 guys drafted ahead of him. He was the rookie of the year ahead of all of them. So, and now he's a $20 million a year guy who also happens to be a social justice guy that I've said this about him when there were thoughts that he would not be an NBA player. I don't care. This guy, whenever his basketball career is over, whatever he does in the world is going to be a lot more important than when he played basketball, and he's playing great basketball. So, and then this guy right here, Kyle Guy, he got into a game the other night. He's had to work his way up. He was also a second round draft pick. He's trying to get his way onto a roster. And he got in some garbage time minutes the other night, made his first career three, had 5 points, and we're rooting for Kyle big time. DeAndre is doing great. Ty Jerome is I think he's working through some injuries right now. Let me think through the rest. London Parentes signed with a G League, a two-way contract. He's probably a G League guy. Anthony Gill is signed after years overseas, playing in Europe. He's with the Washington Wizards now. He's on their main roster. Justin Anderson's kind of floating around right now. Justin had a good run last year with the Brooklyn Nets, and then with the Nets G League team. He's looking for for a job right now. Mariel Shayok, we'll count him. He made a nice gesture to you. He let you get in front of him in line to go to the bathroom at the Raising Cane's in Charlottesville, right?
Raising Cane's in Charlottesville, yeah.
And we'll count Mariel. He played 3 years with us before he transferred for 1 year to Iowa State. Had a great year in the G League last year. He also got cut at the end of preseason. He's looking for a G League job, but he was a 20-plus points per game scorer in the G League last year, so. Mike Scott, the other guy I should think of, way back in the day, early Tony Bennett guy. In fact, he was a holdover from Dave Leto. Mike Scott's still doing well, a bench guy shooting threes for the Philadelphia 76ers. So I think I've covered everybody there. But yeah,
I think that's going to be a column you're going to have to write, Chris Graham, is where are they now?
Probably a regular one, too. Update that up. But we have resubscribed to the NBA League Pass, and in our evenings after our Peloton rides at night, we hunker down on the couch, and I, my job is to make sure the remote control goes to whatever game is the one where the UVA kid is playing, because, you know, the rotations, everything else. Hey, Joe's on the bench. Let's see what DeAndre is doing. Hey, DeAndre's on the bench. Let's see what Malcolm's doing. So yeah. I don't get rest at night. My fingers do some work, keeping up with all our guys. So that's a great thing. We have all these guys in the NBA. And yeah, you're right. I got to start writing about these guys too. Maybe they're not going to expense that, right?
Maybe. Hey, we should also just mention, Chris Graham mentioned earlier in the podcast, he mentioned Jerry Ratcliffe. They co-wrote a book, Team of Destiny, about UVA's championship season, which, of course, since there was no completed season last year, you know, they're still really the reigning national champions. So that book sold really well over Christmas. Amazon pretty much has the last 100 or so copies of that book that are in print at this time. So if you've been thinking about snagging a copy of Team of Destiny, definitely go to Amazon, you know, Mincer's, the UVA bookstore. There's a few other retailers that might still have a few copies of that remaining as well. But definitely, if you've been thinking about grabbing it, now is the time, because that is definitely in limited run now as well.
I'll even sign a copy. It won't quite be as nice as those two great gifts I got for Christmas. I got a signed John Grisham book and then a signed Barack Obama book. I'm not quite John Grisham or Barack Obama, but we'll sign them and we'll get them to you. They'll be worth like an extra penny or two on the open market eventually.
All right, Chris Graham, that was fun. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today and for tuning in to the Street Knowledge Podcast. Chris will be back with more coverage on UVA basketball following Wednesday night's game versus Notre Dame. And you can always look to AugustaFreePress.com for great stats and information. You subscribe to the best stat services out there and can pretty much break down anything that anybody wants to know. So it's pretty awesome that you can share that with the readers of Augusta Free Press. For Augusta Free Press, I'm Crystal Graham, joined by AFP editor Chris Graham. Thanks always for your insight, Chris, and we'll see you again soon.